Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riding from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, and with me again is my good friend Deb Romero, certified Alexander Technique instructor. And Deb, you actually came up with today's topic, which I am all on board with.
Oh, no.
But today's topic is called Training Matters. And so we'll have to take a little dive into what that means. But you, do you want to start off because you sort of brought it up in the way that, hey, this has been coming up a lot as you're working with the Pleiades Equine Group, which is a whole bunch of holistic-based healers helping horses get better, helping horses recover from injuries or illness or, kind of a different rehab approach. And so what's coming up that
So
you
that
wanted to talk
what's
about?
coming up, it boils down to me being as geeky as I am. One of my big mare, who's always been an extension, I finally decided, well, let's try some osteopathy. So, had her first session, got the information. And for about 2 or 3 months, I played with some new ideas. And when she came back again 2 months later, she says, well, whatever you're doing, keep doing it because there's been a big improvement. And a light bulb went off in my head, like, are other trainers doing this? Are other people actually looking at the information their body worker or whatever gives them about, let's say, an imbalance, and are they changing their training protocol to seek the optimal balance? And I talked to Dr. Hancock about that, and she says, no.
And I would say mostly no,
Mostly no.
because, and I just did a video on this for the Horse Geeks Classroom on my YouTube channel. But it's like when you find out what the physical issues are from the horse, whether it's a body worker or the vet or the osteopath, anything that's affecting movement or even the farrier. How you train really matters because you can use training like physical therapy to sort of target different problems. But the reason I say mostly no is because all of a sudden vets are giving training advice. And I've had people tell, vets and body workers or tell the some of my clients, oh, you need to put your horse over ground poles. Oh, you need this new device with that giant elastic band that goes behind the hind legs to the saddle pad. Or you need something like the Pessoa system, or you need to move your horse's legs laterally. And I go, none of that advice, it makes us feel better because we can see joints bends, we bend, right? We can see legs move, we can see different placement of the legs. But I go, if the horse were capable of doing that, they would be doing that. So the reason they're not is always the root cause of all of the leg kinematics or even issues in the back or the pelvis are going to be directed by how the spine is functioning, how stable it is versus how unstable it is. We have five different spinal functions to look at. And so, which one of the five is really the root issue or the most important issue to address? And if I just strap a device on my horse or use draw reins or side reins or even these more elaborate systems that put your horse in what looks like the right frame, or I
Ugh,
send my
that's
horse
a good
over
point.
ground poles where I can see the legs flex and extend. I can see more bend through the legs. And so body workers and vets, a lot of times, out of the best intention to help, they're telling riders, you need to change what you're doing with your horse because what you're doing is creating the same patterns of pain or discomfort. And that's what I think different therapeutic healing modes are really good at. Like you can put your hands on someone and find all the tight spots, right? And so, but to get that advice, To me, it can sometimes make matters worse because if we're not looking at how the axial skeleton is coordinating and we're just trying to use leverage to change
Or
leg
just change the
kinematics.
kinematics of the legs. I mean, because we're so visual.
Yeah. Or change the
We're
head and neck set, change the
right.
overall
And
frame of the horse.
really what it boils down to is going back, and we've repeated this, is we as humans need to become more kinesthetic. We need to go back to the feel of it, not the visual of it.
Well, and not only that, but it's the difference between even if we were going by visual postural changes. Let's say it's a high-headed, highly stressed horse, and your body worker or vet says you need to change the training. Most people can understand it if it's coming from a health professional versus a trainer. And then
That's
there's
another
sort
whole
of, yeah,
podcast.
and I go, these health professionals, vets have spent years and years and years learning what they know. The same with massage therapists or osteopaths or different body workers, acupuncturists, good farriers. And I go, hello, so have trainers. Good trainers, you don't just print a business card and become a trainer, although that is entirely possible and that's how a lot of people do it.
Yeah,
But
it
a good trainer, it's taken me, oh my God, I can't even think how many years I've
I
been
know.
studying it, but I've been practicing it and studying it for at least 25 years. And I go, that's how
Right.
long it takes to even be decent at it, to be good at it. So for a vet to give training advice, I go, could be helpful, could be not helpful, depending on how it's executed. The ground poles could create more bend through the leg, but at the same time, more dysfunction in the invisible parts that we can't see
Right.
along the
Right.
spine, through the back, in the hindquarter muscles that support stability. So people are only willing to make these changes if they can buy a gadget or buy something and do something specific.
And that brings up a really huge point for me is the same with humans is that's why they call the Alexander technique a teaching module, not a therapeutic module, because we help teach the human how to help themselves instead of thinking of going to somebody and getting fixed. There's a responsibility that comes with taking care of yourself, just like using the words self-carriage and the horse. There's a responsibility there
Right.
that
And
I'm
an
wondering.
awareness.
Yeah, that I'm wondering is just everybody wants the easy way out. They want the gadget, they want the pill.
Or they want the
And
therapy to do the work so that
right.
nobody has to change.
It's
They're not
amazing.
asking their horse to change. They're not willing to change
Exactly.
either how we use ourselves off the horse or how we ride. And I think
Or just to be
personally,
curious.
go ahead, sorry.
Just to be curious to, for instance, when the osteopath came and gave me all this information, I said, well, okay, well, let me try something different. Just to be curious enough to ask the question, maybe I shouldn't do, the methodology of 10 minutes of trot and blah, 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 and so many circles. And if my horse has an imbalance, if I'm not changing something, or the human has an imbalance, if I'm not making an attempt to change something, I'm just perpetuating the misbalance, the imbalance.
Yeah. And I
Yeah,
think that's where
it's.
the focus has to change from an external sort of what's the gadget, what's the therapy, what's the pill, what's the thing I need to buy, into beginning to understand. It's complex information and the body is
Yeah.
complex, so it's not simple. It does require sometimes that we shift a paradigm from
Totally.
external, what are we doing, to internal. How is the horse feeling? What is that internal coordination? And I think for your work as an Alexander Technique instructor And definitely for my work as this sort of, trainer in the outer realm of non-traditional, is that threshold with new clients is they have to be willing to step into changing how they're thinking about training, or changing how they balance as a rider, or changing the work they're doing with their horse. And that threshold, that is a big deal. And I can kind of tell when somebody's not there yet. It's maybe not the right time for that person, or they haven't,
That's a good point.
it's not a
That's a really
judgment.
good point.
Yeah, it's
Right.
not a
They
judgment.
just
It's
don't see it yet. And I'm not using it visual. I mean, just it's kind of like when I was homeschooling my kids, and my son, who's 2 years older than my daughter, couldn't get algebra, and my daughter got it, and he was so frustrated. But it was just, you're not there yet. You're not at a place that it makes sense.
No, and people who love their horses and have, kind of run up against the brick wall of progress or to progress over and over, and they've tried different trainers, they've tried different training strategies and theories, and they're not having success with that horse. Those are the people I find I love working with, because they've sort of exhausted the options and they're willing to look at things differently and make changes.
That's
But
a good
if
point. Yeah, because the horse that I had, the case study I presented, I'm still working with the horse just once a week, and the rider. And she mentioned the last time we were together, she says, I've done a 180 on what we started on a year ago. I mean, it's been well, almost a year. She says, my thinking has completely done a 180 with different information. And
Yes.
like you said, she was one of those that just kept pounding the pavement saying, something still isn't right. My horse is not right. It's not right. Even
Yeah.
though she was going to several lameness experts, and things like that, she just, but it wasn't one thing. It was a combination of things that we, the Pleiades group came together and helped with. But like she said, 180 degrees in my thinking of training and what's important and what's not.
Yeah, and one of my most important mentors ever, Gavin Schofield, who's a doctor of osteopathy in England, that guy is light years ahead of his time. And he's the one that introduced the concept of sort of the point of balance and looking at the three-dimensional balance in the body. And sort of at first in my own development, starting to really understand how difficult it is for horses to carry riders and find mechanically sound movement, really authentically mechanically correct movement. That is, it's no harder than learning how to do whatever sport we do, but it's not out there sort of in a prevalent way in our horse industry. So I felt like a beginner all over again, going, oh my God, this is all new information. And I remember saying to Gavin, well, if I'm not going to perform, is this still important? And he goes, any horse that's carrying the weight of a rider has this struggle. And how we ride and what we choose to do with our horses has singularly the biggest impact on our horses' well-being. So what we're doing on a daily repetitive basis as riders, how we ride, or what we're doing in training is always going to have the biggest influence on our horse's well-being, more so than the vet, the chiropractor, the farrier. And he said, if I'm not reaching trainers and judges and professional level riders, he goes, and I've heard this not only from him, but from every body worker I've worked with or vet, that they start recommending me as a trainer because they go, I'm coming back and fixing the same problem in this horse over and over and over. And Gavin was equally as frustrated with that he goes, unless we're changing our dynamic influence on the horse's mind and body, every time we interact, then we're just going to keep repeating and strengthening the dysfunctions or the poor habits of movement that are creating the problems that we're going to get fixed.
And that's, of course, applies completely to humans. And that's when I had the epiphany 15 or so years ago that I could fix people on my massage table, but as soon as they got up and started moving and stayed in their habitual habits, they're always going to come back, which, oh, I'm supposed to love repeat business, but I don't want it that way. What if we change the module of training to prevent all this having to be done? I mean, that's always been my goal, is to say, boy, I would love to see you less. I would love to
Well, and
see you come for maintenance once a month
yes.
and be able to maintain wellness.
And that's, I
But
think, most people who are getting into the horse health profession, that's really genuinely where their heart is. I don't think most horse health professionals are just looking for repeat business. Maybe there's some
right.
out there. But I think most of us have a genuine, authentic desire to help the horse find wellness and stay there. And so I'll get a lot of referrals from different body workers, farriers, vets, because there's only so much you can keep repairing. And as soon as the horse is back in regular work with the regular rider, none of that is sticking very well, right? So maybe it sticks a little bit, maybe it creates a transformation for a day or a week, and then you're right back with the same problem. And in, I had this discussion like with my sister, who's an equine vet. When she was starting to understand more and more of what I was doing, she goes, "Oh, you're just looking at horse health from a preventative point of view or rehabilitation point of view." She goes, "As vets, we're trained to fix what's broken.
Right.
You're trying to prevent the breaking of it, or like physical therapy, restoring after you have an injury or an illness, the body sets up that detour in the nervous system, and you have to retrain the nervous system back to more ideal use of the body. That's why we do PT with people, same reason." And so I'm looking at it from a movement perspective as a trainer, where my sister, the equine vet, is looking at it from how do we deal with either the emergency, or how do we fix what's broken, or how do we mitigate the pain so that the horse can function? It's kind of those
Right.
type of questions. And my other friend, who's a equine body worker, it's okay, let me remind the body and help release patterns of tension, patterns of chronic tightness, or patterns of misuse. But that doesn't guarantee the horse is going to hold those changes that were done while the horse was at halt as a static therapy. It might make some changes, but there could be repeating patterns that just keep coming up and coming up and coming up until we're willing to really look at how we're riding as dynamic weight and mass on our horse's back or in a cart. And how is our horse moving? Even if we're just looking at our horse choosing different postures, right? Rather than manipulating the posture to make it look like a good frame, what does our horse choose? What posture does our horse choose if we're not putting leverage to create a posture? That tells you a lot about the habits or the function of the spine. So, giving a little bit of a looser rein, or not giving as many aids, or not using a device, horses immediately start to show us what their habit of movement is.
And I think that's a great point, because what when you say that, I think about more listening.
Which
More
we talk about.
listening, because we talked about last time about listening through contact instead of always giving an aid.
Or even listening through our eyes, like really observing, refining our observation skills. Because I find when I'm working with people early on, we kind of have to start with the most obvious body part of the horse, the head and neck, right? And so I go, look, there's a million different sort of postural changes that are going on in 1 hour of training session where the horse's neck could be as high as possible, as low as possible, could be bending left chronically, bending right chronically, could be wiggly, could be stiff. Like there's a million different uses of the neck. And I go, so if we refrain from trying to get the head and neck framed up in the right headset, how does the horse choose to use the head and neck? Maybe on a left direction versus a right direction, or at the walk versus the trot versus the canter. Right. And I have, when one of my pet peeves is when people tell me, oh, my horse can't lengthen the neck because it has a high headset. Like it's a confirmation issue that the horse can't lengthen the neck during work because of this high headset that might be entirely sort of true for Morgans and Frisians, a lot of draft crosses, or your saddlebred horses and Arabians. And I go, look, if that were really a functional issue, your horse wouldn't be able to graze. So I go, it doesn't matter that your horse has a what's called a high neck set conformationally. If they can go out and eat grass, you're good to go. That's a postural change. That's a functional use of the neck versus a conformational point of the body.
So
But I
it's
think
not.
with your work too, what I always hear you say is when people start to understand what you're talking about becoming aware and developing self-carriage, taking responsibility for how you use your own body in motion, that you sort of get the same reply I get a lot, which is, I don't want to have to think that much.
And I agree at the very beginning, it is overwhelming
It's a lot of
when
mental awareness.
you open that door, the floodgates come in. And I tell people, hey, just deal with it. It's no big deal. All of those habits are going to smack you 1,000 times a day. Just shrug it off. You noticed it. The biggest thing, the beginning, is noticing that you're doing something
Yeah, because
in a
habits by
way that's not healthy.
definition, they're sort of unconscious. They're out of our conscious awareness. So even noticing our own habits is a big deal. Or even noticing our horses' habits is a big deal because we just get used to how they look, how they feel, what their normal energy level is. And all of that's changeable.
I think that's really important for people to hear. All of that is changeable. And the same with the person, because I have people come to me saying, oh, I have scoliosis. Oh, I have, we've talked about this a long time ago. My left leg's longer than my right, the doctor says. And all of that's changeable. That, you
It's
know,
all
if even
changeable.
the scoliosis, I have a colleague that has scoliosis, and as an Alexander teacher, doesn't affect her one bit because of the knowledge base she has to take care of herself so that she doesn't go down into the thought of, I have scoliosis and it makes me shorter, or whatever the thought process is around that.
Yeah,
But
and
you
I've
wouldn't
worked
know
with
it by
riders.
looking at her.
I've worked with riders with severe scoliosis, the whole gamut of joint issues and joint replacements and joint pain, or even congenital issues with their own symmetrical use of their body. And even people who are missing limbs or portions of limbs. And I go, none of that matters. Like we all have mechanical anomalies. None of us are built perfectly. And we all have a lot of wear and tear by the time we hit 20. It's
Especially
like,
horse people.
especially horse people. So when people get really afraid, like this horse Ozzy, who I've been, doing a case study with on the YouTube channel, it's like his x-rays are nasty. He has gnarly arthritis on both hocks, on the medial side of the joint. And I go, yeah, mine looks about just as bad in my shoulders, but am I still functional? Right. And so
Or I'm taking a class from alexandertechniquescience.com right here about pain. I mean, you could have terrible x-rays and be in absolutely no pain, or be
yeah.
in pain and
And
nothing on
look
the x-rays. So,
picture perfect.
yeah.
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 Yeah, because the body is going to absorb stress in unique ways.
Right.
And so when I looked at Ozzy's horrible hock arthritis, I go, okay, he had his joints injected like a month before he came to me. So we go, we can check that off the list. That should mitigate any discomfort during the process of change. But if I do my job right, he should not, even with the arthritis, be on a joint injection maintenance schedule. I go, to me, maybe one and done, maybe two if it takes a while to fix the problem. And then he's also on Equiox, which is a NSAID. It just helps mitigate any discomfort during the process of change. But what ultimately has to happen with arthritis is movement, restoring the actual correct function of the joint that's affected so that you're not constantly making the arthritis work
Or
worse.
even
Sorry.
go into to question with my case study with the owner, and I had her write the history of his training process. She said that was such an eye opener because I could go back. He was getting hock injections like when he was six.
Yeah.
So
Red alert.
I question that. I want to know why. Why are we there?
Right. And it's become so prevalent that most competitive, especially serious competitive riders, are starting hock injections at 5, 6, 7 years old. And I
Wow.
go, if you have a
Oh my, my.
7-year-old that already has that much joint pain, you either have a serious congenital issue, or the work you're doing is going to break down your horse. If you
Right.
have that kind of stress at that young age, that to me, the body doesn't lie. And
That's a good point. And
that's
it could
why.
be something else. I mean, I've learned so much from the Pleiades group and Stephanie on nutrition. It could be, as you know, an inflammatory response to diet or
That,
whatever.
yes, absolutely.
We don't know. But asking that question, why am I here? At this stage, what could I do different?
Yeah, and what most people want to do is not change their trainer, not change their training program, not change their time frame for when they want to win and when they want to compete, but just let's do pain mitigation on the horse so that we don't have to change anything. And those are your hock injections, your drugs, your pain relief therapies, that kind of thing.
Right.
And really, it's the body telling us, hey, we need to change something. We
We
don't
need to
know what it
change,
is yet, but we need to change something because the body showing those kind of stresses means we have missed something somewhere.
and that's what I said in the we had our first Zoom meeting in the pain workshop yesterday, and I stated, pain is really just an indicator that we're misusing ourselves.
Bingo.
And that's what we
Yeah.
need to look at. We need to, when somebody says, oh, it hurts right here, which we've been through this with your knee, I want to know why.
Well,
Why
and
is
just to be
that?
clear, we're talking about what's usually called idiopathic pain, which means unknown cause, fancy word for unknown cause. If we had an accident or an injury,
Right.
then we know why we're in pain. We know why that thing broke, right?
Right.
But what we're really talking about is sort of the stuff that we attribute to aging, of all things. That, oh, we're just on a slow path of deterioration. And so, how I use myself doesn't matter. We're all going to break down and we're all going to have pain as we age and we're all going to be able to perform less. And You can't really say those things are entirely untrue, but they're not really an excuse. And
Right.
the age over the years, it used to be, oh gosh, I'm wondering if it was even kind of the beginning of my lifetime, if not farther back, that when I look back at horse training and competing in the 40s, 50s, 60s, the average horse age of like top performance was around 12 to 15. That was your horse's, those were your
That's when
horse's
that was the
golden
golden
years.
age, and when everything was going right.
Yeah, you had enough training in there
Right.
and enough youth
Experience,
in
knowledge,
there,
training. Yep,
right?
I agree.
And now it's
Yeah.
horses are being retired and washed up by 10 or 12 years old. They're not finding their peak performance between 10 and 15. They're retiring, they're broken down. They're
Right.
done. And I go, something's changed, not for the better, in our training methodology or our understanding about our horse's health. And I look at health through movement. I go, the vet's going to look through a different lens. The body worker's going to look through a different lens. The farrier's going to look through a different lens. And everybody has a valid perspective on the horse's health. But I think most of the time, training is not considered part of a health routine. And I think it absolutely is, just like what you've been doing with your mare.
Yeah, and we're getting there. But it's a total experiment at this point, just with the knowledge base I have. But for in one checkup and 2 months later, her saying, I don't need to see her for quite some time if you keep this up.
Well, and
That
that's
to me.
exactly sort of part of my path of learning, having to seek out mentors and not having a degree program available for what I wanted to do anywhere.
Right.
It's like the body workers were my best friends and the vets and the farriers because they're the ones that kept me searching for
I like that.
a better theory or a better application of the theory for
Right.
unique horses and how to become adaptable. Because if I got a bad checkup, it was like, oh, I thought I was on the right track, but the horse's body, nothing personal, the horse's
No, it's not.
body is showing me I'm either trying to achieve this theoretical ideal the wrong way, or maybe I have the wrong theory, or maybe I'm asking too much too soon. Or maybe I need to look at different strategies to achieve this theoretical ideal. And if I got a good checkup from the vet or the farrier or the body worker, then I knew, okay, now I'm on the right track. What I'm seeing, what I'm feeling, the decisions I'm making during training are having this positive effect on the body. And I go, that just is what it is. And in a way, it set me free because there's a lot of top trainers who can't stand body workers, maybe because they're getting bad news. Or, they're constantly calling the vet to mitigate problems, trying to like rubber band and paper clip their horse back together to get through performance. So I think how we work on a daily basis and how we use our weight and mass as a rider or a driver is go always going to have a bigger influence on our horse's health than anything else.
Yeah, and I always say this, and when I do workshops, that we only get one. We only get one body
Oh, for us, yeah.
for
I was
us,
going to
and the
say, oh no,
horse
I've had
too.
many horses.
Yeah, we only get one body, and the horse only gets one body.
Right.
So you better start looking at using it to the best of its ability.
Yeah, and that's really what biomechanics, as a new buzzword in the horse industry, is supposed to be showing us, is that if we are biomechanically accurate in our training, bringing the body towards this biomechanical ideal in functionality, not just in a static therapy, but in motion during work, then we should have fewer idiopathic lamenesses. We should have
Right.
less concussive force on the front legs that are going to result in navicular or ring bone or side bone. We should have better hoof growth. We should have shinier coats. We should have more supple muscles. We should have happier horses with fewer behavioral issues. We
Or a
shouldn't.
horse that just wants to spend time with you.
Yeah.
Mine just like hanging out. They'll come up from the path. I was trying to go watch them graze, because unfortunately mine are metabolic, to make sure the muzzles were fitting correctly. And every time I walk out to the pasture, they're like, "Oh, mom."
Yeah.
And they come walking up to me, and I'm like, no, I just want to watch you eat."
Yeah.
And they're like, "No, we'd rather just hang with you."
Yeah. No, in days I'm not working my horses if I'm home, every time I walk outside, they're like, "Hello.
Hello,
Time to
I'm
work. Time
here.
to work." Yeah. And those are some of the signs that we are getting it right.
I totally agree.
Because you can't have a body in pain that's also authentically feeling safe and happy, or that looks forward to physical activity. And it can be a threshold of discomfort, doesn't necessarily have to be pain, but every individual has a different threshold of discomfort before they go, thanks, but no thanks. Right. So when I hear somebody tell me that my horse hates the bit, my horse hates working in the arena, my horse hates this or hates that, I go, usually to me, that's information that we're missing something in this horse's training program or some other health related issue. Or my horse is lazy. My horse hates moving forward. And I go, horses by design are meant to move. So to have a horse that quote unquote loses forward or looks lazy or doesn't want to move, I
There's
go,
something going on.
there's definitely something going on because horses are built to move. Their
Right.
whole body structure is designed for long periods of movement.
Yep.
So when they don't want to move, that's information we need to listen to instead of just labeling it as lazy, you know, or resistant or stubborn, and then getting the whip and the spurs out to say, I just have to make him do it until he likes it. It's like,
Such a
good luck with
predator.
that. Good luck. Maybe you need to think outside the box a little and go, why?
Why
Why?
is this happening?
Why doesn't my horse desire to move freely forward? Is it true on the ground and under saddle? Is it only true when I ride?
Right.
Is it only true when I'm in an area like an arena where we have to turn a lot versus the trail, which is a long straight line? All of that is information, but it's basically the horse saying, I don't like it, which means they either don't feel safe or they don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But yeah, that threshold of changing, oh my God, that is singularly the biggest threshold of anybody new that I work with.
Oh yeah, and I, 3 years of Alexander School, I've mentioned this before. Some days I'd show up and just go in the corner and suck my thumb and hold my blankie. I mean, it was like,
Because
this
it's
is too
hard.
overwhelming.
Yeah.
This is overwhelming to my whole being, just to be in the space.
Yeah, which is actually the other question slash complaint I get a lot in somebody being willing to try this approach I do with optimal balance is that it looks too slow.
Oh, I get that all the time. It's
It's
not
too
fast
slow.
enough.
It's
Yep,
not
too
fast
slow.
enough.
Yep, I get that.
Yeah. And I go, you know, it kind of floors me in the back of my mind. I think, so if you decided to either go on a weight loss program today or go to the gym and get fitter or decide to be a marathon runner or decide you're going to do CrossFit training or you're going to quit eating sugar or quit drinking alcohol or something like that, how fast are you going to be at doing that? How easy is that for us to
Or
do?
when are you actually going to see peak performance?
Yeah. Because movement is a habit, just like any of those habits I just listed. And the only way you can be successful long term is the tedious, slow part of being aware of the habit, redirecting the habit into the new habit, the old habit into the new habit. And I find it almost has to be one or maybe two or three at the most simple things for me to actually change the habit to where the new thing I want to do just becomes automatic and unconscious.
That's that, yeah. And that I don't know, I'm on the fence about this, that, and maybe I'll learn it in this new course about the actual brain and how it functions. Does the old habit actually go away, or is it just overridden by the new one?
That's an
I don't know.
interesting question.
Yeah, because now we're going into the physiology of pain, and thinking of how the brain functions, and that is it a gateway? You know, is it something that just opens and closes?
My
Or is there like a
understanding of it, and I need to learn a lot more. My understanding of it is that, especially during motion, if we talk about the habit of movement, which is technically coordination, right? It's how we coordinate. That the body has central pattern generators, which are little packets of information that are flowing through the nervous system, directing the coordination. And basically, the more we repeat something, those packets sort of create a superhighway. And that's
Right,
what
that
takes it
makes
from
sense.
the conscious level to the unconscious level. And it's efficient. What hurts the brain to change a habit and why we all hate it so much, no matter what the habit is because brains like to be efficient. We want to think about something and have a list of automatic functions that we don't have to
Right.
think about. And so to really bring up what is the habit to our conscious awareness is sort of fatiguing
Very fatiguing.
because we're no longer using our superhighways. I go, now we're trying to create new neural pathways. And I look at it too. I really am curious what you learn from what you're studying with this course. That to me, I imagine it like, the old highway that went through the small town. It was well established and well used until we put
Right.
in the four lane interstate, right?
Superhighway.
And then it's not that the old highway isn't there anymore, but it's
Right.
less maintained, it's less used, maybe
That's
it
a good
gets
way to like. I like that
overgrown.
analogy. That's good.
And whatever our automatic responses are the superhighway. Like that's the interstate versus the little two lane highway that went through the middle of town. And so that's the level of difficulty of it, I think, is that we have to tear down the superhighway and we're now going to move it over somewhere else, or we're going to build a new superhighway, which is going to take a while, and then we're not going to
Right.
use the old superhighway.
Right.
And so that process of construction or reconstruction is no faster through our nervous systems than it is to physically build something. I go, it's just going to take the time it takes.
Right. I agree.
So I think we can wrap it up there. Is there anything
Yeah.
you wanted to add? But
Nope.
I always find it interesting that the rider, when problems come up with horses, that the rider, looking at what they're contributing to the equation is always the last thing to be looked at regarding the horse's health,
Or not at all.
or not at all. And
It's
I think,
always the footing, the saddle, the.
or they're calling in the vet, the farrier, the health practitioner, fix my horse
Fix my horse.
and give it back to me so I can carry on. But we as horse owners and as riders or drivers are part of the health system of the horse.
Right.
Because the choices we're making, the feedback from our horse that we're either listening to or ignoring, and how, like you said, your client had to do a paradigm 180,
Total shift.
total
And
shift.
bless
If
her heart for sticking in there, you know? You know?
the people who do reap the rewards of getting a quote unquote new horse out of their
And
old
you can't
horse.
tell me it's age related because she's in her 70s. So,
The rider's in her 70s.
yeah.
Yeah. And how old's the horse?
He's 16.
Yeah. And this mare I have in
Completely
training
turn
now,
around.
she basically became labeled as dangerous and unrideable and even unsafe to handle in the barn after multiple dressage riders, multiple classical and competitive riders, multiple wins in the show ring. And she's 18 years old. And
Yeah.
I'm having, and nobody helped this horse find self-confidence and self-control. And it's led to a whole bunch of health issues on top of behavioral issues.
And then she finally got attention because she developed health issues now.
Yeah. But she
Yeah.
will, and I've seen this happen many times, come in looking older than 18
Yeah.
and leave looking younger than 18.
Yeah.
That's the power of getting it right with our horses.
Right.
And it is restorative to the horse's health in not over sort of overcoming behavioral issues or lameness issues. It's like the horses go from defensive to happy, and the horses go from lame to sound to having the athletic capacity
Exactly.
for performance, like really restoring athletic ability. It's all the same work.
Yeah.
But if we never look at training or our balance as a rider as part of the health equation, to me it's like I'm just another trainer. I'm a horse trainer. And there's, you know, in some people's
Not.
minds, there's no difference from me and somebody who just last year printed up a business card and decided to make a go out of being a horse trainer. And I go, but there's 25 years of expensive learning,
Yep.
intense learning, and years of practice that make the difference.
I agree.
So I think every horse trainer should like the Alexander Technique Schools. I think we should have a 3-year program, if not a 4-year program, to
Oh,
become
yes.
a horse trainer. One day I'll do that.
We're going to do that.
Yes. All right, you guys, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for all your likes and subscribes and following and comments. And again, if you have any topics you'd like to hear us talk
Yes.
about, feel free to put it in the comment section and we will get to it.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, you guys.
Bye, everybody.
See you later.